www.mediafree.tvpodcastnetwork.
Only the 12-person jury knew if Jackson would be sleeping at Neverland that night or in a jail cell.
The jury speaks out on old cases and live PD, a new take on old cops' tricks. It's The Blotter Presents, episode 16. Welcome back to The Blotter Presents. I'm your host, Sarah D. Bunting. I'm here with returning guest and enduring husband, Dan Patrick Brady. Hi, honey.
Hi, honey. Good job, honey. Nice
Thanks,
introing.
Oh, boy. Yeah, long story that's not that interesting. This week in our Most Wanted segment, we'll be discussing The Jury Speaks, which is an upcoming series on Oxygen. It's not clear to me what order they're airing these in, but this four or five night event series begins Saturday the 22nd with, according to the press materials I received, the O.J. Simpson jury, followed by the Michael Jackson jury, George Zimmerman, and Robert Durst. And then there was a fifth one that's listed on IMDb. I'm not sure what they're doing with that one. Dan, you and I decided to just watch one, which was the Michael Jackson jury.
Correct.
Let's hear a clip from that and then talk a little bit about why we felt we had to cleanse our palates with George Zimmerman. Here's clip two.
You want to talk about a circus? This was a zoo.
Your mom's a zoo.
Dougie Jones was a reporter for Fox News and had a seat in the courtroom.
There were no cameras in the courtroom, so the media had free range to cherry pick the moments they wanted to give to the public. So you had a very biased media presentation of the trial. I was part of it. So that's why I can say it.
Okay. First of all, the expression is free reign. Second of all, shut up, Aphrodite Jones, forever. Dan,
please,
can you talk a little bit about how what an irritant Aphrodite is in this program?
Well, I mean, the whole basis of, I think the whole lesson of the program was that there's this giant disconnect between what happens in the jury room and with the information presented in the trial and what happens with the sensationalistic media outside the trial. And she just encompassed all the sensationalism. She also made it seem as though it was a joke. I mean, they missed this huge opportunity here to really educate people, and she annoyed me to no end, and I consider 90% of it to be her own fault. Sorry.
Yeah, I think this is actually an interesting concept for a show. It is on Oxygen, and I think Oxygen's take on true crime, the network has recently pivoted into all true crime programming, quote unquote, for women, which barf, but whatever. Maybe they can drop that aspect of the branding, but it does tend to be on the like lurid, cheap, cheesy side. But with that said, and the reason we skipped O.J. Simpson is, at least for me, that I felt that O.J. Made in America had enough input from the jurors and that we've just heard enough, I think, about that case, even though Mr. Simpson is up for parole. I guess this week is his hearing or next week.
That I think, yeah.
It is relevant, I guess. Technically, he never goes away. But I thought this was a really interesting idea because I've been on a couple of juries myself. Granted, the only one that made it to deliberations was a podiatry malpractice case. Ask me anything. But they're definitely, you definitely do get in this zone where you've heard 2 weeks of testimony about the bones of the foot and you kind of just want to get the fuck out of there. And we do hear from one very he was my favorite, Roy Holtman, I think his name was.
Right.
On the Michael Jackson jury. And this line from him in clip three really got, for me, to the heart of, like, the problem with the adversarial court system and the jury of your peers. Let's have a listen.
It soon became clear who was on what side.
He was innocent. Prosecution didn't prove their case against him.
I totally feel that he was not guilty.
To me, it wasn't enough to send somebody to prison.
I had leanings toward his guilt. But I really wanted to weigh the evidence on both sides. The problem was, once the other jurors had figured out that most of them were leaning not guilty, that the blinders came on.
Yeah, I thought that was that line got to the heart of it, in terms of the concept of this show, which they sort of review the case and the trials, and then they try to reunite jurors and have them discuss what they've learned in the interim and revote. And in this case, they reunited five jurors. Dan, did you feel like you got more insight into the case, Aphrodite notwithstanding, on the Michael Jackson episode?
Oh, I definitely did. I mean, that's why I think they missed such a huge opportunity. Both shows demonstrated this giant disconnect between what is presented to the public in the press and what is actually discussed at trial. And you brought up earlier the Made in America OJ show, which was excellent. And that's the approach that one needs, because this is such an important issue. I mean, we don't need something that sounds like a History Channel reject, you know?
Yeah.
Bigfoot on trial. You know, we don't need
You that. Would watch that.
I would watch that. I think that would be a great
you
show.
You would be in that.
Copyright. Taking that dibs.
Bigfoot on trial, the Dan Patrick Brady one-man show.
Exactly.
Multiple Obie winner. Can't win.
It would be great if someone could have reconstructed these trials, showing a timeline of what's presented in the press versus what's being presented now that they know it in the courtroom. Because the first show with Despite Aphrodite demonstrated that there wasn't much evidence that was brought to bear against Michael Jackson. The other takeaways I have from the show are the fact that, yes, there's definitely a pack mentality that happens. I think that happens with any group of people that get together, and it can be a challenge. But also the fact that people want to get this right. I really got a sense that all of the jurors that they interviewed were committed to trying to make the right decision. They realized the gravity of the situation, and they were trying to be good jurors.
Yeah, and they also talked in both the episodes that we talked about sort of being shocked at the backlash, because the cases that have been picked, I think, are generally seen as miscarriages of justice or just people not really understanding how the verdict that was arrived at was arrived at. And we hear a little bit about that in clip four. Warning, there's more Aphrodite, but I think this clip speaks to our take on the show, or on this episode at least, which was good. Like, they were trying to investigate something serious, and then this kind of clownish self-promoter who does have a book about Michael Jackson that she wants to promote is like over, you know, just mugging in these talking head interviews. But let's hear the clip.
Everybody was in disbelief of our decision.
We expected probably better evidence, you know, something that was a little more convincing.
It was a worldwide event. People were interested. People wanted to know why. And immediately it turns into an attack.
These people lived through almost 6 months of torture. And now that they came up with this verdict, they're going to be attacked? Can't people accept the truth of a real verdict? And the answer was no.
Well, shut up. Like, it was not torture. Like, I mean, I get sort of exaggerating about how boring jury duty is. It's like a lot of, you know, hurry up and wait and shuffling in and out of the room and asking the bailiff for the bathroom key. Like, I mean, it's been a while since I had to do it, but yeah, it's boring. It's also your civic duty. And this wasn't a podiatry case. This was a big, flashy case that was interesting, I'm sure. 6 months is a long time, but like, bring it down a notch. Like, don't use the word torture. But I do remember this verdict coming back and being like, how could he, you know, he obviously did something.
That's the true point of the whole show, or should be the true point of the whole show, and the educational value of the show, and the reason that you should actually watch the show, if it's handled, I think, correctly by people who are serious about actually exploring the issue, as opposed to people who just want to get something on TV, get some ratings, et cetera, which is obviously all these people wanted to do.
So, I mean, I turned to you after we finished the Michael Jackson episode and said, well, and you're like, well, you're not going to like it, what I have to say, which is, I think we should watch another one.
Yeah, so, I wanted to get away from Aphrodite. I mean, I wanted to see if they were going to follow that format, because she totally got in the way. The second episode about George Zimmerman, I thought, was much closer to the goal. I got a lot more out of it. I still think it's a travesty of justice. But it's so easy for us on the outside to think that, because we aren't there. And that's why this show actually is important, and why actually I think someone should catch an episode. You know, I debated about whether I would even recommend this to anybody. And yeah, I think it's actually something that people should watch, just to get a sense of what it's really like to be in a courtroom and then having to deliberate and realizing that you're getting different information than what is being spread out in the media. And it also, to me, illustrates a bigger point in America. We've got all this fake news BS being tandied about, and this is a good example of figuring out what one can believe and what one maybe should not believe that's being reported in media.
Well, that's a good point. And also, you know, I think what we tend to forget, sort of consuming the product of cases like this, which, you know, they do make money for publishing outlets, and no shade, that's life in America. But that those of us outside the courtroom can consider whatever facts or alternative facts or fake news we like and come to an opinion. A jury can only consider certain evidence according to certain charges. And while I still wasn't entirely clear when it came to the Zimmerman case, I didn't feel like they gave me a great sense in the interviews with the jurors how this happened. Like, the show explained, like, the stand your ground bit was not pertinent, but the show did explain, like, you know, here's the argument for self-defense. Here's what, you know, and here was the evidence in support of self-defense. And there was some forensic evidence suggesting that Trayvon was bending over George Zimmerman at the time that Zimmerman shot him. But I didn't get a great sense from the jurors of their thought process in applying the law and the evidence that they heard. And there were fewer jurors on the revote for that one. I think they only had three.
Right, and one of them wasn't actually an alternate. So,
oh, yeah. And then another one, I think, had been dismissed for, like, hitting on his fellow jurors. He was
although he did become a lawyer, which I find very ironic.
Yes, he did. Know? And my favorite thing was that, like, one of his first comments was that he was super excited that there was swearing in the courtroom. I was like, all right, you and I can hang out. Ramirez, I think his name was, David Ramirez. But I I wish they would do, not that I'm not going to watch the Robert Durst one, because I totally am, but I, based on the Zimmerman one, I would have rather seen, instead of the jury speaks O.J. Simpson, the jury speaks like Stacey Kuhn and all the Rodney King cops.
Sure. I mean, that would have been really, really educational as well. I mean,
the jury speaks Philando Castile. And like, I think there's definitely, I don't know, I think it's more pertinent to our lives and our concerns in 2017 with the justice system, quote unquote. And
although I will point out that they did stress and made it very clear that a lot of the Black Lives Matter stuff began with Trayvon.
Yeah.
And so I applaud that they were able to bring that up. They were not sensationalistic about it. Made it relevant in that respect. Another thing that I think is really important is to realize, I didn't realize until I watched this show, that if you just read the newspaper or watched on TV, you thought this was a case about stand your ground. It was not. It was a case about self-defense. Now, I would argued that, well, the guy walked into it, Zimmerman instigated the whole situation, so how could it be self-defense? But that's neither here nor there. That's for lawyers to decide. But that aspect was totally misrepresented, at least from my memory, by the media. And I think therein lies a perfect example of this disconnect between what we see in the outside and what they see in the courtroom. And what they see in the courtroom, I think, is very important so that we understand why these decisions are made that then affect us as strongly as they affect us.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, because the fact is that when you're watching it as part of like, whatever, it's coming to you in your Twitter feed or your like on the Yahoo homepage or however you're sort of getting the top line of the news, all the nuance has been boiled off the bones of these cases and debates and stories. And I think that bringing that nuance back in and talking to the people who were there is a great concept. And I like that. I mean, I can imagine this pitch meeting, can't you? That someone came into Oxygen or whatever, NBC Universal, and was like, we'd really like to get into some of these fairly scandalous jury decisions and see how they happened, and may have laid out a more, like, Black Lives Matter heavy lineup, for example, and that an executive was like, okay, but you have to lead with a famous case. Like, you have to lead with a tabloid case.
Right, right.
I would recommend watching it. The Michael Jackson one and probably O.J. Simpson, you're going to be seeing some of the same old. So you could probably skip that one. You could probably skip MJ, or at least just mute it when Aphrodite's on. But the Zimmerman one was good. It did succeed in cleansing the palate. I'm glad that you insisted we watch it, because otherwise it would have been like, this is kind of the same, like, kind of a good idea, but crappy execution thing that you see 22 hours a day on the ID network. So,
right, right.
All right. Speaking of 22 hours, shall we move on to our cold case segment?
Certainly, let's.
All right. This is not a vintage show. It's a current show. It's now on two nights a week. I'm not sure if that was always true, and it's gotten either renewed or ramped up by A&E. I'm talking, of course, of Live PD, and we happened to get sucked into it weekend before last, and then we were watching it this week for the show, for the podcast, and I was thrilled that they had a follow-up on a flipped car with a kid in it from last week. But there's just something about this show that is like a, it's like a Poppy Fields show. For those of you not familiar with Poppy Fields movies, it's when that movie you've seen a gazillion times is on cable and you can't turn the channel. You just get sucked into it, like the Poppy Fields and the Wizard of Oz. This show has a similar effect, as does its progenitor, Cops. And here's a gentleman from the Andersonville, Indiana. Is that the place?
I don't know.
Anyway, he just
it doesn't really matter. They all kind of blur together.
Exactly. But his phrasing of his severe issues with a man he is trying to detain it's just like so flavorfully phrased. Let's listen to clip 5.
Me and you are getting ready to have severe issues. I've asked you 4 times now, do you have anything else? No, sir, I don't. Just a little bit there. See where I told you a minute ago you were lying to me, and I knew you were lying to me, that I'm good at what I do?
Sir,
do you understand me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, you're going to end up sealing your own fate here.
Just getting
that's
ready.
That's me talking with clients every day, I'm telling
That's us talking to the cats.
Oh, God. Yes, that too.
Getting ready to have severe issues.
We're going to have some issues.
Yeah. Fixing. If only if he'd said fixing to have severe issues, would it have been?
What we have here is a failure to communicate.
It's your world, boss.
Yes.
Cool Hand Luke, folks. Watch it today. So some of its appeal is the inveterate trashiness of what's going on in clip 6, which host Dan Abrams introduces. Clip 6 basically explains it, so let's have a listen.
We go from one shirtless scene back to another. This one in Greenville, at least this one, we know why they weren't wearing their shirts. It's because apparently they were swimming, but...
Man, y'all just don't come up here no more.
We won't.
I know y'all didn't mean no harm by it, so... Yeah, I do, but... Yeah. They should be sitting just right on top.
I don't even know if
he might have made it over there.
Apparently, they are searching for their cigarettes, which they have accused the hotel owner of chucking.
Yeah, there was a little trespass issue, and the owner decided to throw their property across the fence when he was trying to remove them from the pool. So, I mean, we're just going to try to get them their stuff back and then just send them on their way.
Yes. Now, full disclosure, I have to admit that my dear old dad, when we would go visit him in the summer, would take us to hotels in the mountains of North Carolina, and we would swim in pools until we were thrown out.
Oh,
you should know
really?
That, folks. Yes.
Was your David ever in the tall grass looking for his smokes that the hotel manager hucked over the fence line?
No, we never had any of our stuff chucked anywhere. So it was basically asked to leave. And
this show is like annoying. Like the way that whenever there's like a kid involved, they throw back to the studio and Dan Abrams is like, as a father, I'm horrified. Like, well, most human beings are horrified when a car flips over with a baby in it who's not in a car seat because her father had warrants and life is hard and fucked up for people. But I mean, he can be a little much.
Yeah.
But I like the, and he can also be a little much with the, like, here at HQ, like stalking through this control room. It's like, all right, settle down. Everyone's just playing Candy Crush in the background.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know those computers aren't, I mean, they're rentals and they're not even plugged in. Let's get on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Or they like dusted off the Unsolved Mysteries HQ set. Like there's still I-286 computers back there. But there's something good about the way the show, they definitely like cut away from like searches or traffic stops in progress just when they're sort of about to get good or something weird's about to happen and send you somewhere else so that you'll keep watching until they go back to, for example, Spokane, where an extended family was like breaking into each other's apartments repeatedly for like a whole day.
Well, that was a case where there was this, the daughter had beat up her boyfriend, and gotten arrested for that. And then her father came to retrieve her stuff from the apartment where the boyfriend lived. So the boyfriend called the police on that. And then you come to find out that the boyfriend actually isn't even on the lease. So he has no right to be able to prevent the father from taking her stuff. So it gets very convoluted like that. You know, welcome to real life.
Well, and then he's like, no, but my grandfather's on the lease. Like, and then that bluff is called. And the trooper calls his grandfather, who's like, who the fuck?
Who is he?
I don't know you. I don't know that little tri-flare. I don't know what's going on. And then the trooper's like, I don't really even know why we're talking, to tell you the truth. Have a great day. Like, okay.
And he was also obnoxious as hell. This kid.
Oh, God, that kid.
He was really, I mean, I would have wanted to arrest him within 2 minutes of meeting him.
Yeah.
Just on general principles of failure
GPs.
With humanity. You know, come on.
For sure.
Another call.
Well, I was really hoping when we settled down for our, like, 5-hour strap on an adult diaper and a feed bag rock block of live PD, that there would be some follow-up on last week, where there was a high-speed chase, as we mentioned. The guy flips the car. He comes out, this youngish, he looks young to us, he's probably 30, guy is trying to subdue the guy who, like, will not go down. And then meanwhile, in the background, like, a 2-year-old has wandered out of the car somehow, fine, like, more or less fine. Even though she wasn't in a car seat.
Well, she was taken out of the car by the guy trying to get away.
Oh, was she? I thought producer ran.
Well, ultimately, the producer ran and got her when the policeman finally got the perpetrator, to release the child, because he was trying to apprehend him, but he
really
couldn't.
Right. That's right. And he was sort of
because
like.
Because he was holding this kid almost as a.
Shield.
As a shield. And that's what made it very, very, very difficult to watch.
Yeah. It really felt like it was like 10 or 15 minutes of him just like trying to crawl out from under this police officer and yelling, please, and I can't go back. And
right.
I mean, not for nothing. This was a gentleman of color, and I think there is a, like, I'm just like, dude, just lay down. You're not helping yourself now. But I think there is a desperation in situations like this that I am not going to get, because I am a woman of no color.
That brings up an important point about this. I mean, in this, I don't know anything about this guy's history or anything like that, but it was even mentioned in the original episode that he made claims to some sort of, I don't know if he said it was racially motivated, but he was making claims that he was singled out because he was black, when in reality, he was a guy who was driving 90 to 100 miles an hour down a road, refusing to pull over, crashed his car, pulled his daughter out to use her as a shield. According to this episode that we follow-up that we watched, broke her arm in the process and was trying to still get away. So,
yeah. I mean, I don't think his being, you know... I don't think this incident was racially motivated, but I think his crazy dread of submitting to the cops is, you know, that stems from.
Well, I think for me, this brings up a really important issue about this show. I mean, it's very easy to make fun of cops. And this show, because of all the people who don't have shirts on, and all the people who, you know,
look, I mean, it's July in South Carolina. I'm not going to be wearing a shirt. It's hot as fuck.
The fact remains, you know, that one thing that this show illustrates to me, everybody has no shirt on. They're drunk or they're high on something, which all contributes to incredibly, I want to say stupid behavior, but just irrational behavior.
Poor choices.
Poor choices, etc. You sit there and you look at it from a voyeuristic point of view and you laugh and you go, ha, these people, they are dumb, blah, 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 blah. And reality is, the more and more I watch shows like this, I get the sense that there's a lot of Americans out there who are just like the people that are on this show. They may not be getting in trouble with the police. They may not be using quite as much drugs or as much alcohol or something like that, but they're trying to cope with their miserable lives. And I think this is sort of educational in that regard. These are extreme moments, but I don't think they're as extreme as you're led to believe watching the show. And I don't think that these people should be the victims of mockery that, quite frankly, I am guilty of mocking them constantly. I don't think I get the sense that there's a lot of Americans who lead miserable lives and their only escape is through drugs and alcohol or something else that's slightly nefarious, and they get caught on TV a lot, you know?
Well, and certainly with the opioid crisis that is, you know, has its tentacles in every single state of the union at this point. I think this show, when I first watched the show and it first came on, and I think I said this on Extra Hot Great when I talked about it, or I talked about at some point, it felt a little bit like not propaganda for law enforcement, but that there was this definite eye to showing law enforcement being respectful of their communities and doing things by the book and, you know, protecting and serving people of color, people struggling with addiction issues, the sort of underclass that interfacing with the criminal system can create in this country. And I get less of that sense from the show now. But I think the show itself and the people participating in it are trying to be compassionate towards the clients, shall we say, of
That's true.
The police. That, I mean, okay, that one woman who was like, oh no, I'm fine, I just had a couple mixed drinks. And then they're like, all right, well, you don't know where you live and you only have one shoe, so you're getting in the prowler. Promptly started like sobbing hysterically, like tears squirting out, and I was like, oh god, she's totally gonna barf in the back of that car too. I mean,
they made mention of the fact that we clean up that barf, people.
She was a lot, but it was like, okay, she's a bit of a figure of fun, but you can tell that they've seen her before. And like, whenever they're sort of pulling over a guy that's like, you have 37 citations, Fred, nice to see you for the second time today. Please fix your headlight.
And they let him go.
Yeah, because he had no choice.
Yeah.
And they really are. But then you also get a sense when they're pulling over this guy who had a narcotics warrant and like very carefully asking the passengers, like, get out facing me, interlock your hands, walk backwards toward me, keep coming, down on your knees, cross your ankles, sit on your butt. And this German Shepherd like cannot wait to get in the car and is totally barking. You get a good sense of the dangers involved too. I think it's getting better at being a slice of cop life.
Yeah.
As it goes on.
And I will say that just like the campus PD cops that we know and love, most of the cops that they show are funny, good natured people. That are trying to do a good job. So,
yeah.
I see a value in this show, you know, sort of like knowing your local police kind of a quality to it that I do admire.
And we did get to, I was like trying to, we sort of got a little off topic, but the cop that subdued the car flipping man with the kid and his partner were in the studio, like that was last week. And then they were in the studio for both
for the
episodes
follow-up
this weekend. And they weren't like, they're just sort of like used to doing their jobs, and they're not the best at like giving commentary on their jobs. But the guy's partner had an excellent bit about the sense he had that his partner was close to being overwhelmed by the situation and what it was like to sort of observe him in that moment in clip 7. Let's have a listen.
When I was listening to the radio, and after you work with somebody over a period of time, you know their responses, you can tell their voice, just like a mother or a dad and his child, he knows when something's wrong. Some people are really bad about giving their locations, doing pursuits, what's going on, what's the charges. Chris is really good with communication, and not only on the radio, but letting us know what's going on when things are evolving. And in one particular instance in the chase, I asked on the radio several times, and after the second time, I asked what his location was, and other people were telling me, but it went silent. And I just got a blank feeling. And after I didn't hear him that time, I don't know how fast my vehicle could go, but I pushed it to its limit, and I finally saw his blue lights. And I just remember sliding down the hill and seeing him on top of a guy. I didn't know at the time, of course, that it was a child involved because the child had already been taken away. And to hear his voice saying that he was in a fight, seeing him when I got there, I was a bad feeling.
I mean, yikes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's easy sort of, you watch Law & Order and they have the, like, cops, you know, corrupt partners protecting each other, and you're sort of like, oh, whatever. But that bond is very strong. And when you do work with people, you do get a sense of, like, the difference between I'm not responding because I'm busy and I'm not responding because something is wrong. So I thought it was right. A little bit of, you know, gimmicky to have them in the studio at first, but then to give that insight into that incident and what it was like for him, that it's like, this guy usually is, you know, providing a stream of detail as to his location and what's going on, and he hasn't said anything in a while. Oh shit.
Yeah, so, that's yeah. You forget when you watch, you know, a lot of these things are pulling people over and stuff like that. You forget the fact that these are actually incredibly dangerous situations,
yeah.
Because there could be a weapon in a car, there could be a myriad of things could happen. So every day these guys do take their lives into their hands. One nice thing about the two gentlemen they had on was that they both are, you know. Hopefully I'll never be arrested again, but they both are the kind of people I trust them, you know. I mean,
no, right.
I don't want to be arrested by them, but if I have to be arrested by anybody, those guys can come.
You'd like to be arrested by them.
Those
okay.
Guys. Well. I mean, the gentleman who spoke, I just want to point out that the gentleman who when we just heard on the clip, he is like the detective or something like that in charge of, I guess, a lot of what was going on in that episode of the guy who flipped over the car with the kid. And the earlier episode, he spent some, they showed him talking to the guy, and he wasn't a bad cop at all. He showed so much compassion on his face while listening to this man who, rant and everything like that. I was very moved by that.
Yeah. You know, and he was especially after with the adrenaline that must've been going.
Oh yeah!
For everyone in that situation,
I can only imagine, you know.
But another thing, there was a guy I think in Arizona, I'm gonna say, that pulled over that kid who, and then he was like, "Well, there's nothing illegal about buying porn. You could have just told me that you were doing that." And I forget what the charge actually ended up being. But on his way up to the driver's side window, he did something that apparently they all do. And I'd completely forgotten about it, which is he comes up as he's approaching the driver's side window. He makes sure to leave his thumbprint on the taillight, which they all do now in case they're shot.
Wow. Yeah.
Like it's that's in the training apparently. And I just was like, oh, wow. Like this is something that they have to do in case just pulling someone over for speeding or having a light out. They get both barrels. Like, well, now you can find my killer because I left my thumbprint on the
taillight. I was here. Right.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it does give, sometimes in spite of itself, the show, good insights into what it's like to be a cop out there in 2017.
It's not as fun as Campus PD, because nothing beats, you know, drunk 19-year-old kids, but...
Who think they know everything. Yeah.
Who know everything. But and we all have been that 19-year-old kid. It is an educational show. It's voyeuristic to a degree, which may or may not be a good thing. I've learned a few things in the few times I've watched it. So if you want to watch it, I would have to recommend it.
Yeah, same here.
Not nearly as sensational as some other things. And Aphrodite Jones is not on this show.
Yeah, I do have one thing to clock them for, which is, and if you follow us on Twitter at Blatter Presents, and on Facebook at Blatter Presents, you will see this snap of the panel in the studio looking horrified that a drunk hustler, it has like just announced, and he's like, fine, lock me up, I want to go to jail and suck some dick. So, like, I mean, it's 2017, and I feel like nobody should be like pearl clutchy about how some people need to make their way in the world anymore, especially not like, gasp, gay sex, yikes. Like, here's the reaction, which I thought was a little bit vintage in clip 8.
Come on. He wants to do what?
Things in jail with other people.
I just want to make sure I understood it, Tom. So I don't need a translation,
well,
right?
He had a prior for solicitation, and his goal was to walk and talk himself into jail tonight so that he could actually... Well.
We should have introduced him to that bar that we saw earlier in the show.
Oh, God. I got to get a photo of that place.
What was it called? Come In Me?
The Come In, C-U-M.
Yes, yes.
I-N-N. Like, no. And on top of that, it's like this weird barn facade structure in a strip mall in, where was that, Spokane again?
Yeah, I don't even know.
Spokane, you got.
It could be anywhere.
You got problems. I mean, I just don't feel like... I feel like the show is very compassionate about substance abuse and about, like, sometimes you just get in a, like, shit cycle with warrants and not having enough money and failure to appear and stuff like that, and it's tough to get out of it. And they're... not very judgmental about that stuff, but, and they haven't had that much sex stuff on there, but I feel like that compassion does not extend to sex work and
lifestyle choices.
Yes. The, you know, beautiful variety of humanity and gender. I suspect the show avoids that stuff because there's a little bit of anxiety on the panel, which is always dudes. It's diverse racially, but I don't recall seeing a lady on there. I could be wrong. Don't at me. Actually, do at me, because I'm curious to know if they've had women on the panel in the studio. But yeah, that part needs work. But if you're home on a weekend night and you're like, you know, we don't need this. We have cops. It's different. It's different from Cops, and I think it's worth watching if you like Cops. I think you will also like this show. All right, folks. Dan, anything else to add?
Nothing much. I think both the shows we covered today are worth a peek. And then it's up to you as to whether you want to keep watching them. There are some educational values in both of them. There's some entertainment values in both of them. And that's why we watch TV, I guess.
Indeed. That's an excellent note to end on. Dan, thank you for joining us. Our booking sheet for future episodes. Next time, we'll be joined by first-time guest Monty Ashley for 2 by Joe Berlinger, Gone and The System. Coming up, we've got some Anniversary of Sam. We've got some Notorious B.I.G. We've got all sorts of things here on The Blatter Presents. You can follow us on Twitter at Blatter Presents. We're also on Facebook at Blatter Presents. I'm Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. We'll talk to you next time.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.